brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions.
Archetypes, when awakened in you, flesh out your capabilities. As you integrate their strengths, they begin to feel like a part of you. Asking them to be your allies can help you be the director of your own life play. Today, we'll be exploring the archetypes of four ancient Greek gods and goddesses: Zeus, Demeter, Persephone, and Dionysus, and what they have to contribute to your life in this postmodern era with our guest, Carol Pearson. Dr. Carol Pearson is an expert in depth psychology and transformational leadership, as well as the archetypal narrative intelligence. She has served as professor at several universities and colleges and also served as president of the Pacifica Graduate Institute in Santa Barbara. She was a senior editor of The Inner Edge, a resource for enlightened business practice. She's the author of such classic works as The Hero Within, Awakening the Heroes Within, The Hero and the Outlaw, and Persephone Rising, Awakening the Heroine Within. Join us for the next hour as we explore using the power of story to transform your life with our guest, Dr. Carol Pearson. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. I'll be your host. Welcome to New Dimensions. Carol, welcome.
So glad to be back with you.
It's so wonderful to sit across from you once more.
Yeah.
I know you begin your book saying something that we are in right now in these times. We are in an incomplete revolution. What do you mean?
Well, what I mean is there are many changes that happened in the 60s particularly, and in the 70s, and the 80s, and the 90s. All the liberation movements, all the change in technology that helps us so much, but also keeps us tethered. All the changes in science, all the changes in the social sciences and ways of thinking.
Even brain science research.
Brain science. We know so much about ourselves. And the sky's the limit potentially, but in the process, we're having to let go of a lot of things that are hard to let go of. It's hard to know what to hold on to. Life can be somewhat overwhelming, and particularly women are talking about how overwhelming it is just to raise a family and have a career, much less if you're involved in social change activities and various things. And you could really see, particularly lately when we were in a political season, and people saying, really talking about how much is wrong. And, well, a lot of what is causing suffering for people. Some of it is being attached to the way it was and holding on. Some of it is life is a little bit hard right now. But if we have the bigger picture, the bigger picture that we're in the midst of a change, and changes are messy. Mm. And it isn't always comfortable. And we know that in our personal lives as well. We're in a time of transition. It can be hard, a lot of learning curves at the same time. So I think that we can handle living in the contemporary world with more ease if we see that.
Right. And I would love for you to say, like, there are two dominant stories that are present right now. And I know that you advocate maybe looking at a third story. But before we look at that, can we look at what are the two dominant stories? The one, like, the win-lose story, and then another one is more about abundance and diversity.
Since this interview happens to be right after the conventions.
This is we're doing the interview, just to remind our listeners, in the summer of 2016.
Yeah. Yes. And it doesn't matter. It's a timely reference, but it doesn't matter because it just illustrates some things that are ongoing in our culture. We had in the Republican convention pretty much the paradigm that is about which is hierarchical and has the virtue of saying, let's all try to use competition to try to be the best we can be. But also that our value comes from the fact that we are a celebrity or we have a lot of money or we have achieved great things. And that has the incredible downside of making wonderful people who are keeping the society going feeling bad about themselves and keeping everybody having to work so hard just to feel like I'm good enough to be valued. You know, there's the idea of there's the somebodies and the nobodies there. And on the other hand, there's a paradigm that, and I think actually this isn't the old balance to a dualism, but an emerging paradigm, which you did see a bit in the Democratic convention, but you also see in the culture at large, as we see both of them. And that's the paradigm related to democracy that says we all matter. And I grew up in a Christian tradition where I learned that even though I didn't keep all of those beliefs that I was taught, I kept the belief, the fundamental belief that we're all God's children. And I find it really helpful to, when I'm feeling judgmental about somebody, to remember that. Uh-huh. But in that paradigm, we all matter. And what's emerging in that paradigm is a sense that of oneness. That it's not just that we all matter in some abstract way, but that we're all connected and interdependent. And so my helping you isn't some sacrifice I do. I need you. I need you, and I need you to be able to be your best self, because if, in fact, we were all our best selves and brought our gifts and our perspectives, we could solve all the problems we have. Mm-hmm. And in that paradigm, I don't think it's all the truth is one way. I personally believe this, that we are all one and we all matter, but we also need to take it seriously that we have some responsibility to be our best selves and work hard and develop our strengths.
So that's part of that third story.
That third story.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Is that there's a piece of truth in both.
In the book Persephone Rising, you really talk about some of these Greek archetypes. And as I mentioned in the introduction, that these can be helpful to us in some way as we weave our way through this changing time. And you mentioned many times the Eleusinian mysteries that were conducted in Greece in ancient times. And what were the origins of these mysteries?
Well, they were practiced for 1,500 years. And they it's thought that they started with women as a initiation ritual for young girls. So it was for young girls and their mothers. And by the classical period in Greece, it was for everybody, and everybody who was anybody went through this. It probably had a lot to do with the development of democracy and drama, at least, and maybe philosophy. It was incredibly powerful. It was the most honored mystery tradition in Greece, and mystery traditions were really initiations to change your thinking, to transform your thinking. And the promise of this was that if you went through it, you would be happy, you would feel prosperous, and you would be courageous, no longer having so much fear, particularly of death. And evidently, people said that's what they got. That's what they had. And it was a time, particularly later on when it was for everyone, that where they were in massive transformation, going through transformation. That's when they were really discovering modern science, at least in the West, philosophy, these things.
What years are we talking about?
We're talking about a couple of decades before, at the end of BC, and okay. Then a few decades after, not decades, centuries.
So, starting before the birth of Christ, so a couple of centuries before the birth of Christ.
When it was at its height, and yeah. Then a couple of centuries after that, it really was shut down in about the 3rd century.
Okay.
By the Romans.
Yes.
But it was, to think that, and it was, I think it's sort of like many of our movements here, particularly the more emergent spiritual movements and also some of the liberation movements. It wasn't political, but it had a big impact on the whole culture because everybody was going through it.
Right.
Everybody wanted to be happy.
And I know that this came out of, at least in mythology, it came out of the whole idea of Demeter and her whole challenge when her daughter was supposedly abducted
to the underworld.
I really want to go into that story and to find out how is that relevant to today, and how did it first institute these mysteries to actually occur?
Well, Demeter was not only the mother goddess, a mother goddess, because her story is all about her and her daughter Persephone, who was abducted to the underworld, and then her mother focuses on trying to rescue her. But she was also the grain goddess, and the Greeks believed that she brought agriculture to Greece and taught her priests and priestesses taught people how to farm.
I want to remind our listeners that I'm here with Dr. Carol Pearson. She's the author of Persephone Rising, Awakening the Heroine Within. And if you want to know more about her work, you can go to her website, carolspearson.com. And Pearson is spelled P-E-A-R-S-O-N, carolspearson.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions.
Thank you.
I'm here with Dr. Carol S. Pearson, and she's the author of Persephone Rising. We're talking about the Eleusinian Mysteries and how they were first conceived by the Greek goddess Demeter. And you spoke that she was a goddess of grain. And in these times, if we're going forward, what's the importance of her particular symbol for us today?
Well, she's the goddess of care, of caring as a mother, but also of caring for the earth in partnership with the earth. There's a huge famine in the middle of the story, and which is like our climate change, where major change had to happen for the earth to be fertile again. She's also, her story is the story of a mother who is experiencing incredible grief because her daughter is abducted to the underworld by Hades, the lord of the underworld. And then she discovers that Persephone's father, her daughter, Persephone's father was Zeus, the chief god. And she knows that because she had a roll in the hay with him, which produced this, but he was an absentee father. But nevertheless, observing patriarchal rules, he had told Hades that he could have her.
So he had the right to marry her off.
He did. He had the right to marry her off. And so she is then, her task is, she wants to get her back, but they had rules for goddesses and gods. She couldn't go to the underworld. She was an upper world goddess. And so she wanders and is suffering and unhappy until at one point, with many details to that, she experiences some kindness on the road. She's disguised herself as a mortal peasant woman, which is how she feels, and that it's related to how some of us feel when we feel much smaller than we are. But at one point, she gets really angry, and when she gets angry, she returns to her full height as a goddess, and she says, "Build me a temple," and then she sits there. And at that point, she doesn't let the grain grow because she's what makes the grain grow.
So that was like one of the first sit-in strikes.
It was
so
the
to
first
speak.
Sit-in strike. Yeah.
She just sat down and said, "Okay, I'm not playing this role right now."
Right, and Zeus and his sons and had been hearing her pleas and going kind of there. It's all fine. This is a good marriage, and I've approved it. And
don't then, worry about it. We're just going to be
and
all
then,
right.
So then Zeus. Has this great awakening. And his great awakening is that he may be the chief of the gods, but he can't make the grain grow. And he goes through this transformation, which is really cool and relevant to today, I think, as we're trying to move out of patriarchy into being full partners as men and women, where he gives in because the people are going to starve and there'll be no one left to worship him. But when he does, he starts recognizing that, wait a minute, you know, I can't make the grain grow, but she can. I can't make anybody love me, and they don't. But Aphrodite can. And he begins to look around at all the energies and the strengths and the power that is there with all the different gods and goddesses. And when he does, he can relax and stop being such a jerk.
So, and then he starts to understand that he needs to share the power in some way.
He needs to share the power.
Yeah.
And that takes a lot of the pressure, you know, out of the stress off of him. So that's kind of related to when we think we have to do it all ourselves, we can look around at how many people are there and all the help that we have. But also, that's when there's enough again. When that shift happens, there's enough. The grass grows and the flowers grow and the crops grow and they have plenty. Meanwhile, Persephone from the underworld. I'll talk about Persephone later because there's.
Okay, just there's, one moment
yeah.
Before you go into Persephone. Demeter said, "Build a temple." Part of that was that's where she established, I believe you mentioned in the book, how she established these rituals and mysteries. And she wanted to, she realized that the mortals needed more education to really know more. So she was like one of the first big educators I can see.
Oh, she was. And if you think about this in the history of religion, the way the gods had been working with people is they thought when people were bad and didn't do what they want, they would punish them. And that insight, there were many mortals who helped her when she was disguised as a peasant woman. And out of that, she recognized that, no, they don't need punishment. They need help to understand the mysteries of life and death. And that's how the Eleusinian Mysteries is created.
So that there we go. That's the establishment of that. And now we've said something about Zeus. Let's go back to Demeter first. Her strength is her nurturing and caring, I think. And
yeah.
What would be her shadow side then?
Well, it is the caregiver archetype, and the shadow of the caregiver archetype is that there's a tendency to be manipulative and controlling, but also sacrificial. And when she...
Become a martyr, I guess.
Be a martyr to help other people. And when, you know, when she's being all pathetic, and, you know, she's just totally pathetic when somebody does something to her daughter, when she remembers she's a goddess. And, you know, there is that I count too, and what I love counts too, what I value counts too, and she's willing to take a really strong stand rather than, you know, you could imagine her as bringing casseroles to everybody in the neighborhood, which is very good, but taking a stand. And right now in our culture, and when you said that we not only have climate change because we're not caring for the earth, we're raping it, we also aren't caring for one another. And so that this, and there was some of that in ancient Greece too. And this goddess is saying, when you don't care for each other, you don't have prosperity, you don't have love, and everybody gets afraid. That's the happiness, prosperity, and courage.
Now, going to Zeus, he was authoritarian and so forth and so on, but I want to talk about his strengths. Like, if we wanted to personify our Zeus energy in the best part of that in our lives, what would that look like?
Well, what I would acknowledge just first, Zeus starts out in exile because his father was swallowing all his children, and his mother saved him and sent him to Crete, and where he grew up by himself, basically. I mean, he started out powerless, exiled.
As an orphan.
Abandoned, an orphan. Okay, so he started with nothing, and then he connected up with his, what saved him was he connected up with his inner power and his sense of calling and purpose. And his purpose was to actually become the chief of the gods. And then he called on his warrior strength to fight to get there. And he had all the strength to be able, a lot of strength to be able to have a calling, persevere, even when it was really horrible. There's one point where Typhon, a big monster, has subdued him and taken the tendons out of his hands and feet.
So he couldn't even move.
He couldn't even move. And Hermes comes and helps him, which is beginning the help thing, and saves us. And he learns from Hades that he can be strong without being violent, and learns to use negotiation instead of war.
A brother, right?
Yes. They're all
kind
brothers
related.
And sisters.
Yeah,
Demeter's
right.
A sister.
Yeah.
It's very incestuous.
Yes.
But he's got a real gift of social organization. He understands how to put things together. He understands power dynamics. With so many of us that have a very spiritual approach to life, forget to care about or notice. And he goes from maybe sometimes power over in a negative way to power with and power for that is capable of making a society really work. I mean, for any of us who are trying to figure out, well, what's my purpose and how do I get there, he's part of the answer.
Yes.
Demeter's part of the answer, too.
So it's not to just negate that altogether, but it's bringing these qualities into our lives in their multiplicity, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, every one of the stories, every one of these gods and goddesses in their myths have dysfunctional childhoods. And their stories, if you put them together, the myths, are how we can move from whatever difficulty we came from to have the gifts. So at different parts of their stories, they show the less developed parts.
Right.
Which is different than how our, gods are now and how we think of them. But it was kind of a brilliant thing by these ancients to take human qualities to and show us in the myths how to get there.
What do you mean if that's different than how gods are now, the way we view?
Only that that we tend to have our gods be perfect. They're more aspirational.
Yes.
Whereas these gods and goddesses went through the same kind of struggles that we do.
Yes. So that's the power of these myths. That we can relate to them in a human way, so
yeah,
to speak, because they've been there and done that.
Right, and for us, they're personifications as archetypes of particular energy patterns that all humans have access to.
What about now Persephone? We're going to at least begin our exploration of Persephone. So, tell us, Persephone was very, very interesting. She was able to. You mentioned earlier how Demeter could not go into the underworld, and in a way, Hades, who is the god of the underworld, could not come to the upper world. But Persephone was very different in her configuration because she was able through her strivings and through her choices and destiny and fate or whatever those qualities were, she was able to travel between the two worlds. So we'll talk about that in just one moment. And I want to remind our listeners that I am here with Carol S. Pearson. She is the author of many books, including The Hero Within and also, Persephone Rising, Awakening the Heroine Within. And if you want to know more about the work of Carol Pearson, you can go to her website, carolspearson.com. And she spells her last name, P-E-A-R-S-O-N, carolspearson.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org.
I'm here with Dr. Carol S. Pearson. She's the author of Persephone Rising, Awakening the Heroine Within. And we're getting to the part of the story of the Greek goddess Persephone. So what can you tell us about her